Hey, Julie.
Hey Lisa, how are you?
I am doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. We should say from the outset of this episode that our wonderful editor Erin is enjoying a break from editing this week. So this podcast episode we will release without any editing. So apologies in advance to our lovely listeners, and thanks for your patience. Lisa, welcome back from California. We are recording this episode just a few days after you ran CIM. I haven't even had a chance to talk to you, so I am so eager to hear about everything CIM. And so I'm going to tee it up and just start out with, tell us about your entire race experience, starting with beginning of your weekend.
Oh wow. So it was a long weekend. It feels like I was just saying I can't believe it was just, it's less than a week ago that, well, I left a week ago for California and ran the race less than a week ago. It feels like a very long period of time. I will back up and start last Friday when we left for California. And the one thing I will say, especially for runners who are considering doing this from the East Coast, or who don't live on the West Coast, is don't forget how long of a trip it is. We left at noon our time, East Coast time, on Friday. We flew straight to San Francisco, got off at San Francisco, literally walked a couple gates over, and got right on a plane to go to Sacramento. So really no transfer time, and landed in Sacramento at 5 p.m. local time, 8 p.m. our time. So we had been traveling. We had been in the air for 8 hours. I had left my house, I think, at like 10 a.m. our time. So it had been a very long trip. And I felt like I was, first of all, I had brought snacks on the plane, but the time change when we got on the plane, I had lunch before I left the house, even, I think. So like early, I had something to eat early. I brought snacks for the plane. But I was also wearing a mask. I was very careful about getting sick. I was nervous about getting sick before the race, so I was wearing a mask and wore it for most of the plane ride. So I took it off for a couple of quick snacks and a couple of quick drinks. But bottom line is, we got into Sacramento at 8 p.m. our time, 5 p.m. local time. Hit a lot of traffic getting to the airport. I'm getting from the airport to the hotel. So I will say, you land at the airport. I think it's typically about a 20-minute drive from the airport into to downtown Sacramento, and it took longer. We were in rush hour traffic, so I had a headache. I was hungry. I was tired. I was hangry. And there is nothing to get at the Sacramento airport. I thought maybe we'll grab something. I think most stuff was closed, or there was maybe like a little convenience store to buy like drinks and chips and stuff like that. But I didn't see anything. We didn't look very carefully. I was like, let's just get out of here and get to the hotel, and then we'll get dinner. But I'll tell you, I felt really crappy after the travel. Just really, like I said, grumpy, hangry. It was neat. We went. Well, the other thing I will mention about arriving in Sacramento, we went out to the Uber or rideshare meeting area, and it is not easy to get rideshare there. Every time I requested on Uber, I requested on Lyft, and it was like finding, finding, finding. Finally, found, and this was the experience of the people around us too. It would find somebody, and they would be in like downtown Sacramento. Actually, one of the Uber drivers called me and said, "Hey, I don't know why it like matched us. I'm in downtown Sacramento. I can't get there for at least a half hour. There's got to be somebody closer to you. Like, why don't you cancel the request and re-request?" And we did that a couple of times, and nothing was working. So Paul recognized that across the like just across the waiting area, there were cabs coming. And he said, "Let's go grab a cab instead." So we walked over. We asked one of the cab drivers. He said, "Sure, let me call somebody for you." And he called. He said, "It'll be here in 30 seconds." And a cab came pulling up. And as the cab came pulling up, another runner kind of came over to that side to look for a cab as well. And I recognized him as a local runner from here that we know, James Carey, who's an MCRC. And we said, "Hey, how are you?" And so we said, "Where are you going?" And he was going to the hotel right next door. So we shared a cab to downtown Sacramento. And the cost of a cab is about the same as the cost of an Uber or Lyft. So tip for anybody flying into Sacramento, particularly at rush hour time, because again, we arrived at 5 p.m. local time, do not count on Uber or Lyft to be able to come get you. But the taxis are there, and they cost about the same. And it took us, like I said, about maybe a half hour, 40 minutes to get into Sacramento. And we stayed at the the Sheraton, which is right across the street from the convention center, which is a very, very convenient location. It was the kind of the host, when you look up the hotels in Sacramento, I think it was the host or the official hotel, and it was really almost connected to the convention center. It wasn't actually connected, but it was just outside the door. And right next to our hotel is a Hyatt. That's where Jim was staying, and also equally close to the convention center, which was where the expo takes place. So very convenient location. For CIM, you can stay in a few different locations. You can stay in downtown Sacramento, right next to the convention center. You can stay west of the city where they have a few host hotels that they do coordinate shuttles with in the morning of the race. So you can stay in that area, or you can stay at the start line, which is in Folsom. So you can stay there, and then they have shuttles there that you can take to the start. Everyone needs to get to the start on shuttles. There is no parking. There's no even drop off. I think it has to be at the local shuttles in Folsom. So
now that you've done it, would you recommend staying in Sacramento or Folsom?
Absolutely staying in Sacramento. So I absolutely would say stay there. It was very, very convenient to the airport, very convenient to the expo. And we'll get to the, you know, transportation to the start the next morning, but I would stay there. So, so we finally got to the hotel. We got checked in. It was a great hotel, lovely hotel. And we decided, instead of going out and trying to look for something to eat, we were just going to eat in the hotel restaurant that was right there. Because again, I was just like, get me food, get me to bed, because I'm grumpy. So we went down to the hotel restaurant, and it was in the lobby. And I will say, it took a very long time. It took a half hour to get our food, and we just ordered. We ordered like four appetizers to share, because we thought those would be quicker, and those looked good too. There were some good, like, kind of carby appetizer that looked good. Some like pretzel bites and some chips with dip and a charcuterie board. We said, we're just going to order all that, and it took about a half hour. So again, grumpy and hungry. We had finished eating by about 6:45 and realized that the expo is actually open till 7 p.m. on Friday night. And because it was right next to our hotel, I said, why don't we try to go pop over and see if we can get our bibs before it closes. So we did. We went both days. We went Friday night and we went back on Saturday. Friday night was empty because, again, it was like 15 minutes before it closed. It is very efficiently set up expo, lots of space in the convention center. It is a dynamic bib system. So you show them your QR code and they scan it and they give you the next bib. So you go to different stations, and each station, I think, had different, you know, different range of bibs. So say they sent me to desk five and they had the 5,000 bibs, and Paul went to desk four and he got a 4,000 bib. So it's a dynamic. You don't have your bib number ahead of time. They scan it. They assign you the bib. You pick up your shirt, which I think that's one of the highlights of this race, that the race shirts are really, really nice. And that was generally the feedback of everyone we talked to. Really nice shirts that you can actually wear, again, long sleeve ASICS shirts. They do have a section where you can buy things, but it, unlike other big expos where you get kind of funneled into that area and you can't escape, it wasn't like that. Like, you actually had to find the area that had race gear. So they had a good section of race gear. They had a lot of, a lot of exhibitors in the expo. Again, it was like 10 minutes to close now once we got our bibs. So we kind of quickly walked around just to see what was at the expo. It was a very easy expo to get into and out of. It was almost 7 o'clock and I was exhausted. So we grabbed the bibs, did a quick walkthrough, kind of scoped things out for the next day because I had planned to meet our runners at the expo. So kind of figured out a good place to tell them where I'd be standing and where I'd meet, get a lay of the land. And then we went back to the hotel we walked right down the street from the convention center, about 3 or 4 blocks, is a Target. So another good tip to go stock up on some drinks and some snacks for the room and, just whatever we needed for the trip, particularly drinks. We wanted to get some drinks for the room. So we walked down to that Target. Before I had gone, I had listened to a few podcasts on CIM and had heard from a lot of people talking about the race that there are no grocery stores. There's really no place to get stuff like that. There wasn't that I could see, but there is that Target, which is very easy walking distance from. So after we went to the expo, we walked down to the Target, picked up some drinks and some other things for the room, went back, and man, we crashed. Like I was done. So that travel, I would say, is just something to keep in mind for folks that are coming from the East Coast. And I don't think I needed to build in an extra day, but I wish I kind of had prepared myself for that really long travel because that it just wiped me and I was dead by the time I went to bed on Friday night.
What would you have done differently, if anything?
Maybe gone a day early you know, gone on Thursday. But you know, in terms of flight, it's going to San Francisco and then San Francisco to Sacramento was super easy. Like I said, we had no lag time in between. Everything was on time. We went from one plane to the next plane took off. The Sacramento flight was like, it was funny. It was a tiny, tiny plane. It was like one of the little tiny planes, and it got up in the air and they said, okay, we're now preparing for arrival. It was like, now please make sure your trays are up and your seat backs are forward because we're coming in for, I'm like, well, we just took off. Like, it was so weird. It's like a 20-minute flight. So it was kind of, actually they don't even, we kind of checked all of our, even our carry-ons from the other flight. We checked because on that plane, there's no even really overhead bin space. So they just put them underneath. So I don't think I would have done anything differently except maybe gone a day earlier to have a little bit more time. Maybe I don't know if having left here earlier in the morning would have made a difference. I don't think so. It's still a long time. One thing I may have done differently, which we did, and I'll talk about later on the way home, is booked an economy plus seat. We were in plane economy, and it's a big, you know, it was a big plane. I forget which model it is, but it's the one that has three seats on the ends and four in the middle and two aisles up and down. So 3-4-3. And it was full and we were like squished. It was like, so I felt like I got off the plane feeling, that was the other thing when we got off the plane. It's like, I felt like my shoulders and something was weird with the seat. Like I felt uncomfortable. My back hurt. Like it was just, it's again. So maybe I would have upgraded, maybe spent a little bit of extra money to upgrade to a little bit farther up in the plane. So anyway, we, you know, went to bed Friday night, slept very well. We were up at 4 o'clock in the morning on Saturday because, again, time difference. So that's something to take into account. It ends up working in your favor. I will get to that later, but it ended up working in the East Coast folks' favor and to stay on that time. But we were up at like 4 a.m. So I think we just kind of like, you know, dozed off or played on our phones. And by the time it got light out, we decided to go for a little bit of a shakeout run and explore the area. And Paul had looked at the map before and figured out you can go down to the river and there's like a river kind of path along the river. And I will say, you know, we have several runners that were there. One of our alumni who's been on our podcast before, Lori Rice, was running the race. And I had touched base with her on Friday when I was in the half days of like, I don't even know what's going on. You know, we'll touch base tomorrow. And, you know, I had thought as we were leaving, I said, oh, I should have checked with her to see if she wanted to come run with us. And then I sort of thought, well, that'd be funny if we see her while we're out. And sure enough, we went down to the river and we ran along the river. It's a nice river path. Like it's not super, I mean, I think it goes long both directions. We didn't go very long. We went each direction to check it out. We didn't go very far. I will say in one direction, in the immediate downtown area, it seems pretty safe. It's in like kind of an old town Sacramento area. It's pretty commercial. The farther you go on it, we turned around at this point, but the farther you go on it, it's a little more desolate. And there becomes like a, I think it's like a homeless, like encampment of lots of tents and like, you know, which is fine. And it seemed safe, but for a woman, I told Paul, if I was by myself, I probably would have stopped at that point and turned around and head back. So otherwise, very safe, you know, safe, easy place to run flat. So we ran kind of out and back, and on the way back, of course, we ran into Lori. So I said, I thought we might see you here. A lot of, and it turned out later when I looked at final search for Tim Cashman, one of our runners who was also there, he had done a shakeout run in the same place at the same time. I think we probably had just missed him. So it seems to be kind of the place that people go to run in Sacramento. So if you're staying in downtown Sacramento and you want to get a shakeout run, just find the river, get to the river. It was like maybe 6 or 7 blocks for us from where we were near the convention center down to the river. Did a little out and back just to test things. I will tell you sort of a funny, almost tragic story. At one point, right before we turned around, it was like there was a gate to like a, I don't know, some kind of access road. And if you've ever seen on the ground, those spikes that they have to prevent people from going the wrong direction, have you ever seen those? They were there and I didn't notice. I didn't see. And I almost tripped on it. Like I hit my heel on one of them and I didn't almost go down. I kind of stumbled a little bit. I kept myself up and we were like, phew, you know, thank God that didn't happen. But when I got back to the hotel and I looked at my shoe, actually, I didn't even look at it until after the race. When I eventually looked at my shoe, it split the whole bottom of my shoe. I had to throw my shoes away there.
I assume these weren't your racing shoes.
Not my racing shoes. No, they were a slightly older pair of still good though, training shoes. So yeah, but it split the bottom. It totally cut through the bottom, the heel where it had. So luckily I did not go down, because I thought, what? Oh my gosh, that would be
Wow,
horrible.
that was close. And you bring up a great point. It's never a bad idea to bring a couple of pairs of shoes.
Yeah, right. So I do that because I bring like my racing shoes, and then I bring usually like slightly older pair of, and that I should talk a little bit about that, what I packed of running shoes, because I know I'm probably going to do a shakeout run. So something I can do a short shakeout run in. And I brought this year also a pair of tossable shoes, like older running shoes that I was going to donate anyway, to wear to the start, to bring my racing shoes with me, just for whatever reason. Like, actually, I'd listened to a podcast before I went where somebody mentioned doing that, because they like putting on their racing shoes and feeling like their feet are fresh and, you know, the shoes feel good. So I had shoes to get rid of anyway. So I did that. I packed a lot. I packed the, you know, running training shoes. I packed racing shoes. I packed old giveaway shoes. I packed UFOs. And then I obviously had like my regular walking shoes, which are just older shoes. Anyway.
Tell the people who may want to know, what are your racing shoes?
I wore Saucony Endorphin Elites, which is what I've worn for Boston. I wore them the first time in Boston this past year, which honestly, I did not like them in Boston because it rained, and I don't think they were great in rain. They're very slick. I wore them in Chicago, which they felt good. And I wore them here, which they felt good. I don't know if they make a difference. I don't know, you know, but I have liked those. They've been fine, except I'll get to something later that something came up this time that I don't know if it's the shoe or if something in my sock, but, in general, they've been totally fine for Boston. I mean, for Chicago, Boston, like I said, they were slippery in the rain. Chicago, they were great. No problems, a little bit of an issue this time, but nothing major. So, yeah. So anyway, we, did that little shakeout run, went back to the hotel, just, you know, chilled out, had something to eat, and we had planned to meet our runners at the expo at noon. So I think we just, you know, we chilled, we relaxed in the hotel. Oh, I'm sorry, Lori came over. So Lori came over for lunch. I was like, what do we do for lunch? We ordered Uber Eats for lunch. So we found now I'm forgetting the name. Wasn't Del Taco. I forget what it was. Paul, no, it's not. Paul knows the name. It's very famous and actually in San Diego, but it's like kind of like a California tortilla type of place, but much better. So got, you know, rice bowls with chicken and ordered one for Lori, and she came over to our hotel to meet us, and we sat down in the lobby and ate. And actually a funny story, after we came back from our shakeout run, we were in the elevator, taking the elevator back up, and we got chatting with the people in the elevator, and they got off at our floor, and we asked them in during the discussion of, you know, where are you from? And they said Nashville. And we said, oh, that's so funny. We have a friend here who's from Nashville. And they didn't know her directly, but when we said Lori's name, they said, oh, is she rabbi in Nashville? We said, yes. They said, oh, our friend is friends with her. So an indirect connection. And when we had lunch with Lori in the lobby, they happened to be coming down at the same time. So they came down and talked to us. It was great. They were super nice. Couple with another, actually he's a coach in Nashville, and he had a runner there that was running. We met her. She knows Lori better. She was kind of the connection. So I'm just a small world. And I will say, I guess I should mention this now. And I was talking to Paul about it this morning, because I told him we were going to talk about the race. And I said, you know, what are your thoughts on it? Like feedback. And, the vibe of the race, and I'm just saying this because it's evident even in the hotel and in the hotel lobby and in the people we met and people we saw and at the expo, the vibe is very elite. And I mean, I guess that makes sense. We all know CIM is where a lot of people go to try to qualify for Olympic trials, just go sub-3, the BQ. The feel is very, Paul said it was like kind of intimidating. Like it feels like Boston, I think, a little bit, you know, like a lot of really good, fast runners. I thought it was similar to Indy. Paul thought Indy didn't feel as intense, is what kind of how he describes. A lot of really intense, fit looking, like fast looking people with really big goals. Like you hear people talking about their goals. Like we could just overhear people talking about like, oh, you're going for OTQ. Oh, or you know, and it was just like, it's pretty, I wouldn't say in your face, but it feels very intense. So that's what it felt like, even just sitting in the hotel and eating lunch and looking at the people and hearing people's conversations and meeting people. It's definitely a very, it attracts a lot of fast runners. I mean, truly, the corrals as they're set up. I think I was in like the I forget which corral, but it was pretty far back. And then my corral is for 306 to 315, so it'd be pretty far back for a 306 to 315 corral. Is indicative of the pace, the talent in the pool. So I would say it definitely feels like that. So, you know, we hung out in the lobby, you know, chatted with people, kind of people watch, talk to people until noon. And then we all walked over to the expo together. And that's where we got to meet up with our runners, which was really nice. We got to take a picture, which I think you posted on social media, and got to give some last minute tips and just chat with everybody about their goals and how they were feeling. So that was really nice. And most people had already gone to the expo and gotten their stuff, but anyone who hadn't went in after, we went back in briefly just to kind of get a better feel for the expo when it was actually populated. And then it was definitely more crowded and more well attended. But still there were no lines for bibs. It was very easy. It's a very easy, it does seem like CIM caters to the runner who's coming to perform. So they make it easy to get your bib. They make it easy. You know, everything is kind of like set up for you so that you can go back to your hotel and relax. Like you don't have to spend a ton of time on your feet there. So, so that's exactly what we did. We went back to our hotel, relaxed. Lori had mentioned to me that later in the day at 3 p.m., Dina Castor was going to be speaking on a panel. And did I want to go back and meet her? And I said, absolutely. So that I would go back. So we went back to the hotel, put our feet up, just relaxed, watched TV, whatever. I don't remember what we were doing, but just kind of hung out there. And I went back to the expo at 3 o'clock with Lori to see Dina. And that was a really fun, that just a neat, you know, she to me is somebody I've kind of followed my entire running career. And I think I shared with you the story that she at one point, before I ever did the Pan Am Maccabi Games 20 years ago, she had competed in the Israel Maccabi Games and clearly had won a gold medal. And when I started getting involved with the Maccabi Games and had become a chair of the half marathon team, probably in 2000, I don't know, 4 or 5, I had written her an email to ask her if she would help spread the word or if she knew of anybody who wanted to be on the team or she wanted to be on the team. And she did write back to me, you know, and said like, thanks so much for reaching out. I'll spread the word and good luck to the team. And she could, I remember I have the email somewhere. She couldn't do it because she was, I want to say preparing for the Olympics or something. She said, you know, timing doesn't work for me because I have Olympic trials or I don't remember what it was, but it was, she couldn't do it, but she would very graciously wrote a nice email back. And so that was, you know, almost 20 years ago that she did that. So, so she's somebody I followed from when she was Dina Drossin, which is her, you know, her maiden name. And so it was really neat to see her because she's our age. And it was really inspiring to hear her talk about how she still finds joy in running and really in everything she does. And it was a really, it was a great, I'm actually just looking up because I wrote down, I took a couple notes of, here we go. I took a few notes of things that she said that really resonated me. One thing she talked about was showing up each day and being the best version of yourself. So even if that's not what you were 10 or 20 years ago, how we show up each day and aim to be the best version of yourself that day. And that could just mean you put clothes on, you take a shower and you put clothes on and that's what you do. And she talked about it in all aspects. And, you know, when she cooks, when she does the laundry, when she picks up dog poop, she used as an example, she said, you know, show up each day and be the best version of yourself. She talked about joy training, which is actually a TEDx talk that she does that you can look up. She did a TEDx talk on joy training. And, you know, somebody asked her, I asked her about how she sets goals now, you know, because she's done so much. Like, how do you keep finding goals that keep you motivated and excited? And she said she's always looking for growth from wherever she is at this point now. So it's about looking for growth. So, and I thought that was neat. And then somebody asked her about, you know, how do you deal with disappointment? And I wrote this down because it's really, really resonated with me. She said, disappointment means we really care about something. Let it sit and resonate with us until we find a solution so that it's okay to have disappointment and like use that to like sit with it and use it to, again, push you forward and help you grow. And I thought that was really great. So she had a lot of really, really insightful things to say. And it was really neat to see her. We wanted to kind of hang out and get a picture with her, but she was mobbed after. So, I was tired and wanted to go back.
I think in our archives, we have a picture with her, so we can just pretend you did, because I think we did one at Boston.
We did at Boston. Yeah. We absolutely do. Yeah.
But your points remind me, you know, her book, Let Your Mind Run, is incredible. It's really such a top-notch running book. And there are so many books out there, and there are so many incredible books released this year that we've talked about on the podcast. Of course, Des and Kara's book were both amazing. And then Lauren Fleshman's book, but Dina's book is really, to me, for me personally, I think is the best, like, mental tips for just really getting, training your brain to stay positive in difficult moments on the run and beyond the run. So for those who have not yet read Dina's book, this is right now just a reminder that it is really a terrific book for runners and non-runners. I think a lot of her advice and experiences can apply both within and outside of running. So if you haven't yet read it or listen to it, it is available on Audible. She reads it. It's a terrific book.
It is. It's one that I always recommend to a runner still to this day, even with all the other great books, it's always the one that I go back to. And I was wishing that I had paid more attention to the expo schedule and had brought my copy with me, because people had brought their copies to be signed. And I thought, oh, if I had looked at the schedule ahead of time. So if you're doing CIM next year, look at the schedule, see who's coming to speak. And they have a lot of good speakers. So check out that schedule ahead of time. So yeah, so after that, went back to the hotel, ordered an early Uber Eats dinner. There isn't a ton in Sacramento. Is a very seems like more of a business, business weekday city. It's sort of, it reminded me a lot of Columbus. When I was in Columbus, a lot of things were closed. Like, things aren't always open. There are plenty of restaurants.
Just going to say that. Uh-huh. It sounds a lot like my hometown, Columbus.
Yeah. It's like Columbus, where stuff is like closed on the weekend because it's open during the week.
Downtown in the business district. Right, there's neighborhoods that aren't. Yeah.
And I had heard before I went that if you're a coffee drinker, like, don't count on coffee places being open on Sunday morning, because they're not, or even Saturday morning. But we saw plenty of places. They were open. There were not a ton, unless you want to go out to like a restaurant. And if you do, I mean, from what we understood and what we saw, restaurants are on race weekend are like full at like 4 p.m. because everyone's trying to get out and get to eat. So if you're going to go out to eat, either make a reservation or go very early to get a seat somewhere. We ordered Uber Eats, which worked out fine, other than the fact that, and Julie, every time we order Uber Eats and we order sushi, it always comes with soy sauce and chopsticks, right? Ours do not. So we had no chopsticks and no soy sauce for our sushi. It's fine.
Fortunately, sushi is salty enough, so you still got your sodium without the soy sauce.
Yeah, I was a little like, oh no. But whatever, we ate dry. It was kind of like dry sushi. It was kind of like, okay, whatever. We just shoved it down to get some rice in. It was fine. But just mental note to self, next time you order Uber Eats, just make sure you request like utensils and condiments if you need them. So we did that, went to bed early. Again, we were tired because we are on still on East Coast time. So went to bed. So the deal with CIM is that you cannot check a bag in Folsom, unless you're a very elite athlete. Because I did see some elite athletes getting check bags, but in general, you cannot check a bag. So if you are going to check a bag, you need to either do it at the expo, or you can do it race morning before boarding the bus. Now, I didn't want to check a bag at the expo because I wanted to check my phone, and I wasn't going to do that, you know, and have no phone the night of before the race. So I figured I will do it the morning of. I would say I would not recommend that. We left. So our hotel again was across from the convention center, which is across from where the bus is boarded. And we went out, the bag check, I think, started at 4 a.m. and bus loading started at 4:30. And we went out about 4:10 a.m. and the line to check bags was like all the way around the convention center. And I took one look at Paul. I said, I'm going to put my bag back up in the room. I'm like, I don't need to stand in this line. It was moving, but it was also confusing, because then they were saying, well, there's one line for bag check, there's one line if you're just getting on the bus. And so once I took my bag back up to the hotel room, dropped it off, came back to kind of like made sure I had everything I needed. I did bring a bag, a clear bag, not that they care, but I brought a clear bag with my race shoes, my race nutrition. I forget what else I brought, but you know, the stuff that I was going to need to just dispose of at the, you know, at the start area. But I left my bag with dry clothes and my phone up in the room. So once I came back, we went to go get into the quote unquote line that was getting just on the buses. But then it turned out that I don't think that it was confusion is the bottom line. Nobody knew what anybody was doing. And then it turns out we weren't really even in a line because we were misdirected by somebody and everyone just kind of converged and people had bags and they didn't know where they went. And it was a little bit of a shit show. It didn't take long because once they started boarding the buses at 4:30, it was very quick, but nobody knew where anything was going. And I still can't quite figure out where I saw where the bag check was, but I don't know how. I did not check a bag. And I would say, if you are checking a bag in the future, just figure, first of all, if you are staying at one of those hotels, what I should have done is at like 4 a.m., gone down from our room, taken my bag to the bag check, checked it, and then gone back up to the room, got my rest of my stuff, and then we could have gone out to the buses at 4:30. So if you are checking the morning of, I would say either go super early so you can get your bag checked and then get in the line for the buses. Or maybe, like I said, it might have been that if I just held on to my bag, by the time we got to the line for the bus up into toward the front where the buses were loading, the bag check was there, but it looked closed. It was very weird. So maybe I could have then thrown them my bag and said, can you take my bag? But I didn't take a chance. I left it in the hotel room. I would say if you can get away without checking a bag, don't check a bag because it's just kind of a pain. Or if you don't want to check your phone, check it the day before and leave it. Because the expo, it's very clear. There's just a table when you walk into the expo, bag check, you give them your bag and that's it. It's super, super easy. I just thought it was very confusing and very hectic. And it just seemed like there were thousands of people waiting to get on the buses and nobody really knew exactly like what line to be in or where we were going. 4:30, the buses all pulled up and people started getting into them and it was pretty smooth. You just basically walked up to a bus, got in a bus, and the buses then left. And then the next row of buses pulled up and people got in the bus and they pulled off and they left. So we did get on the buses, I'd say about 4:40. It took a good almost 50 minutes, I think, to get to Folsom. And it doesn't seem like there wasn't traffic. It didn't seem like it was a super long, you know, there wasn't any reason. All the buses go to Folsom. They all go park. And again, this is, you're taking a bus from anywhere. If you stay in the West hotels, you can take it from there. If you're staying in Folsom, there's a shopping center. You can take them there. All the buses arrive in the staging area and they all park there. They don't leave. So you can stay on the bus. You can get off, go to the porta potties. You can get back on the bus. Although it's very hard to tell which bus was yours because some of them are coach buses, some of them are school buses. If you get off of a bus, like just make sure you make a mental and you leave. And I would say don't leave anything on, just bring your stuff with you because you can get back on any bus to sit. We got back on a different bus to sit and wait. Like people are just getting on and off of buses. It's kind of just like they're staged, all staged there. So we got off the bus when we arrived and went straight to the porta potties, which I had heard was the CIM has the largest number of porta potties of any, you know, per capita or per racer. They have one porta potty for every 30 racers, and the line of porta potties is probably
statistic.
Yes, the line of porta potties is about maybe a half mile long. So when we first got off, the first porta potties, of course, had long lines, but we kept walking, and there were no lines in the later ones. We got, you know, into the line, no problem. Went back to a bus, sat in a bus. It was not super cold. It was about 50 at the start. So it was not super cold for us. It was actually perfect weather, but still it was a little chilly. So, and it was still dark. So we got back on the bus to kind of hang out in a nice warm bus to kind of hang out and wait. And that's where we were seated next to a group of people who are all O2Q runners. And it's a little intimidating. Anyway, so then we decided, so the race starts at 7, we're supposed to start at 7. And we decided at about 6:15, I said, let's get back off and go get back in a porta potty line before we go to the start corrals. And by then, all of the porta potty lines all the way down were, I would guess, at least 20 to 30 minute porta potty lines.
So in summary, before we get to that logistic, you leaving, what time exactly did you leave the hotel?
4:10.
So it sounds like leaving at 4:10 was your sweet spot because you got in line, and when the line started to really form, you were fine.
Yes. Yeah. I would absolutely be at the buses. If you're going from downtown Sacramento, be at the buses by 4:15. So you can be in those first groups to get on the buses to then leave, to get to Folsom, to then get in the porta potty lines. It's sort of like Boston, you know, how we go try to get there early and you get there, and then, you know, next time you go to get in line, all of the lines are long. It's the exact same thing. So again, because I was a little desperate. He found a tree and like some bushes, which a lot of people were doing. It was like a whole area where people were just running into the bushes. Not something you want to have to do, but there was literally none of the lines were any going to give us any chance of getting into the corrals at time. So did that. Then we went to the corral. So I was at the corrals probably 6:40, 6:45. They start to fill up then. And then they made an announcement about that time that there was going to be a 10-minute delay. To allow people to arrive there. I think there was some delay with the buses. I think, so definitely if you're going, be on the early side, because who wants to be on that late side where you're getting delayed and you're now worried about getting there in time and using porta potties and that sort of thing. So they told us there was a 10-minute delay, which is a little, I'd already taken my first gel because it was like 6:40. So I took my gel and then they're like 10-minute delay. I'm like, whatever, it's fine. And again, the corrals are lined up. I don't remember the exact kind of breakdown, but the first one is like OTQ. They have like elite OTQ. Then they have, I think the first one after that is 250 to 304 or 305, and then 306 to 315, and then 316 to 340. So that's a big one. And then they have like 341 to 4 to something like 420, all of those, like kind of that those, and they're self-seating. You just go get in your corral. So I went, in the 306 to 315 corral, and kind of had the game plan I did for Chicago. I felt good. I said, you know what, I'm going to start around, this time I said, I'm going to start around the 310 pacer and see how I feel. At 710, gun went off. The start of the CIM course is downhill and then you take a right-hand turn and it's uphill. So right in the first mile, I think is indicative of the entire course. It's like always changing gears, down, up, down, up, down. The CIM course is net downhill, but net downhill does not mean entirely downhill. And what I had heard before, which is true, is for every one you go up, you get two in return down. And that's actually true because my net down was 600 feet. My net up in the, my total, down in my stats is 600. My total up is 300. So for every, that is about right. You got about, you get twice back. So, but again, there are ups and there are downs and there are a lot of them. And that is probably what I did not, even though I had listened to things about the CIM course, I had heard about it and I knew that there were rolling hills in the first half. I think I underestimated how much that can affect you to be constantly changing gears. So that is evident off the start line. If you literally, like I said, you get this nice long downhill and you take a right turn, it's like, and you're going not steep, but you're taking a right turn and you're going up. So immediately it's like that gear changing and you're, I was thinking like, okay, don't, ease up, keep the effort same, spin my wheels, like all of that, which was fine. So I kind of stuck around, not necessarily in, but around this 310 pace group. And I noticed right off the bat, and this is a rookie mistake and something we warn all of our runners. We always say pacers are human. Don't follow them blindly. Don't just go with the pacer. You know your race. And I know that and I'm experienced. And I kept looking down at my watch going, I didn't really do the math, but I think 702 and 705 is probably, that's faster than 310 pace. Like, I think that's supposed to be like closer to 720. Like that. But then I kept thinking, okay, well, maybe the pacer knows, he knows, like, I don't know. I kept fooling myself. I said, it feels okay. Like, I feel good. And I'm riding the downhills. I'm taking it easy on the uphills and I'm sticking with this pace group. And I'm like, all right, I'm just going to roll with it. And I felt good. I was taking my nutrition. I will say for some of the water stations at CIM, they're on both sides of the street. Like it's on one side and then the other. Some it was not. So that was a little bit confusing because, sometimes I would mostly on the left side of the road to kind of stay out of the crowd of the pace group and the other people that were on the, everyone seemed to be on the right side of the road. And most times, at least at the beginning of the race, that worked. It was fine. We'd like come upon a water on that side that nobody was at and it worked. But not always. So sometimes I would totally miss the water because I'd be like, wait, wasn't there supposed to be water on the left side? Again, I kept looking at my watch. I think at 10 miles, 10 miles I looked and we went through the 10 mile, I think at like 1:11. And I was like, oh, this is too fast. I know this is too fast. Like I probably should slow down, but I didn't really want to lose the pace group. And I thought, all right, we'll just see like how I feel. And if I have to ease up a little bit, I will. Our pace leader was good. He was giving some really good tips. I like one of the tips he gave on the hills on going up was like you've got a string on your chest that's pulling you up the hill. So lead with your chest, keep your chest up. You know, he was giving some really good tips. Like, how are you talking and giving these tips as we're, you know, running at this pace? But he was very good. So again, we're going through these ups and downs and ups and downs. So every time I think, like, I in my head, I had from listening to course descriptions that there was a hill in mile one. There was one significant, more significant hilly, you know, kind of rolling hills at 8, 12, and then 21 is a bridge. That's what I had in my head. Every time I looked, there was, again, what goes up must come down. But every time, you know, every time I looked, I'm like, there's another hill. There's another hill. And again, it would be not super long and not super steep, but just enough to have to change gears. And then we get the down on the other side and you change gears again. And so it was getting to be where I started to feel like this is like gonna, I think gonna wear me. And I was a little skeptical. And so we went through the half and I looked at my watch at the half and it was 1:33 something. And I thought, damn it, this is like fast. This is
Do you think part of it, I mean, I know you, cause we tell our runners this all the time. We don't use pacers as a tool to execute our races. We use them more as a reference point. Say, okay, do you feel like because you discovered the course was slightly different than how you visualized it, that you were relying on the pacer a little bit more than you would have otherwise? Yeah. And looking back, do you regret that? Or are you okay with that? Like, what are your feelings about it?
Yeah, I had a couple of things going through my mind. First was like, okay, well, he probably knows what he's doing. Like maybe he's building a little time in the front because, you know, I didn't know. I a couple times did think, well, like he's got to know the course. Like I'm kind of trusting. The other thing was, hey, maybe I feel really great and I'm going to run sub 3:10 today. Like, hey, this is, that could be like, maybe. And that's probably not very smart. And yeah, so I just kept thinking, but by the time we got to the half, I realized I started feeling a little bit in my legs. I started having a little bit of stomach issues. Like I could feel, it wasn't anything bad, but I could feel like pressure in my stomach, which I hadn't before. And I don't know if it was because I wasn't taking fluids as much as I should have because I missed some water stations, or if it was just, I did exactly what I did at Chicago, Morton's every 30 minutes, like nothing different. So I don't know what it was, but I definitely felt some pressure where I was like, am I going to need a porta potty? What's going on? Is this going to get worse? Get better? Is it going to go away? Like, what is it? So at that point at the half, I made the conscious decision. I said, all right, I'd like to stay with this pace group and I'd like to, but I don't think I can, I'm going to have to ease up just a little bit. So I'd have to look back at my splits. But I think at that point, I kind of dialed it back a little bit. And I kept telling myself, like, I in my head, again, I had that after that hill at 12, you know, the second half is really more down. And for sure, the last 10K is like down. So I'm like, okay, if I can just get to the half, like I can cruise, there won't be this up and down, up and down. There was still the up and down and up and down. Like it didn't stop. So it was like, and it was like mentally like, oh my gosh, like when does the up and down stop? So again, every one we'd go up, I'd get more down. So you get the down, but it's still, it was definitely taking a toll on my legs. So by about, I'd say mile 16 or something, I knew I was going to have to just ease up. And my stomach still was like a little bit weird. And then I started feeling a little bit of like, I thought I had a pebble in my front of my right shoe. I was like, do I have something in my shoe? But I just kind of ignored it. I didn't pay much attention to it. It wasn't bothering. Nothing was bothering. It didn't change my gait. It wasn't bothering me, but I thought it felt like I had a little pebble in my shoe. Anyway, by the time I got to 20, so the bridge actually comes at the end of 21, close to 22. It's a small bridge. Nothing that was really inconsequential. But by the time I got to that, I was like, I was sort of mentally done. I was physically done. I was like, look, I knew at that point I'd still be able to have a decent finish time. I knew it was likely not going to be, you know, the 3:10 or 3:11, like, you know, like Chicago, but I knew it would still be, I felt good enough that it would still be a decent finish. So at that point, I think, which I tried to prevent it from happening, but I knew at some point I was going to say, well, I got my 3:11 in Chicago. I don't have to push. Right. And I didn't want that to happen. I wanted still to give it all my all, leave it all out there. But I think at that point I was like, well, I got my 3:11 in Chicago. I'm good with that. Like, that's a good time. And, you know, now I'm ready to be done. And what happens after you cross the bridge is you start counting down the streets. I think it starts at 57th and you finish at 9th, which is nice, except when you keep looking and going, okay, I'm at 48th and I have to get to 9th. And then I look, I'd be like, I'm at 39th and I still have to get to 9th. I remember each one. It was like 48, 39, 29, 18. And I was like, every 10 blocks or so, I kind of make note. I'm like, I still have more to go. So you get down to 9th, you take two sharp lefts. You take a left and a left. And the nice thing is that the finish line is right there. Like you don't have to see it. It's not like Boston where you see it coming for a long time. It's right there. Cross the finish line. in 3:15. So, you know, it's still a decent time. Not, you know, not what I had certainly gone through the half in. If you think about my half splits, I don't even like to think about that. But, you know, I certainly went out too fast, but finished feeling good. The finish line is interesting, I would say. It is, you walk through the finish line and immediately I think we got the medals first. Then they gave us, so it's the 40th anniversary. So this was a special year where they gave out a special extra like premium. So after we got the medals, you walked and they were giving out actual water bottles, like bike water bottles, you know, like actual reusable water bottles. And they were filled with about 2 ounces of water. So you'd get the water bottle and like immediately I like went to go drink it and it was gone. And I was like, can I get more water? And I did see people going to ask if they could fill it up with more water. And I don't know what the answer was, but like 2 ounces of water, I get that they're giving away the water bottles and they probably filled them up partly, but I was thirsty and I wanted more water. So then you walk past that. And then they were giving out the backpacks and actually they were giving out like nutrition. Like I got like a Stroop waffle and like some other things, but they were basically just like, it was weird. They were like throwing it at you. And if you also didn't know to go get a backpack, you missed it. And it was a little bit, it was just confusing, the finish line. So I got all my stuff and I got to the end of the line. And then you kind of sort of exited that area where they were giving away things. And I saw people coming back saying, oh, I missed the backpack. I didn't get it. Can I go back and get it? And I gotta tell you, I was a little surprised. At least this one exchange I saw, this one volunteer was like, why didn't you stop and get one? And they're like, I didn't see them. And I didn't realize they were giving them out. Well, they were right there. Why didn't you get one? You can't go back in now. And they were like, I can't go right there and just get a backpack. Like, it wasn't like we had even left the finisher's area. It wasn't like an open area to the public. It was just, you had left the part. And this guy was giving these people a hard time. They're like, oh, I didn't see it either. And he's like, too bad. You didn't see it. You didn't stop. Keep going, keep going. I was like, wow, he's really mean to these people who just want to go back and get their backpack. They came with a jacket, a backpack, and they'd given us the water bottle. So the finish line area was very confusing. And then you walked farther and there was a bag. You could go, you know, collect your bag from the bag area. There was not great signage as to the exit though. So I was following kind of just the flow of traffic and I ended up in the bag check area, which I didn't have a bag, so it didn't matter. And I was heading back toward our hotel, which was about a half mile from the finish line. And I got to this part where I thought I was gonna cross and it was all blocked off. It said no exit. So I was like, turn around, go all the way back through the bag check, go to the finally went to the information tent. I'm like, how do I get out of here? And they're like, oh, we'll go this way. And then you got to cross across the course. They'll let you cross across the course. I, like, by the time I got out of there, I just wanted, I hadn't checked a bag. So I didn't have a bag. I was cold. I didn't have a phone. So I couldn't check to see like where Paul was or where any of our runners were to see if I could watch them finish. So I left in a way where you could watch that last, when you come down to 9th Street before you take the last two lefts, that's where I crossed. So I could see some people coming and I was watching to see if anybody we knew was coming through, but they weren't. And then they had us cross the street and I walked back to the hotel. So it was definitely a confusing finish area. It was like hectic. And Paul had the same experience I did. He's like, I couldn't figure out how to get out. I just wanted to get out and get back. And I couldn't, you know, he said the volunteers were not, I don't want to trash the volunteers. I think the volunteers were great, but he said the volunteers were not nice and they were throwing things at him too, like, and, you know, throwing the backpacks. And he said, nobody was nice. I just couldn't like figure out how to get out. And so I wasn't super impressed with the finish line area. It seemed like there was a lot of stuff going on. Like there was a beer fest and like, you know, a place to hang out with the spectators who came to meet you. And that the bag check seemed very, very organized, unlike Chicago. It was all great. There are lots of volunteers and there were no lines to pick up bags if I had a bag there. So that seemed organized, but it just, the setup itself, like I felt, it felt claustrophobic. That's what Paul said. He said it felt claustrophobic. And I felt that also. And maybe that's because so many people finished in front of us because it's such a fast race and so many people were there already. And it was just confusing, but it was definitely a confusing finish. And if you stay in a hotel near the expo, there is a walk from okay. You know, it was about a half mile.
So I have a couple of questions before we get to a little bit more about the finish logistics. So I'm asking this there seemed to be a lot of folks this year that were surprised by the level of difficulty of the course compared to how the course was discussed on podcasts in the past, including our podcast. I mean, we had last year a race director on to talk about Siam. So first of all, I want to ask you, Do you think at all when running this mentally, was there any point in which do you think your expectations affected how you were feeling during the race because of that?
I think I expected an easier course. I think that's what it was. Like, you know, every you hear it's fast, you hear, you know, everyone flocks there. And again, I listened to podcasts. We've spoken to, the executive director of CIM, and he said, you've got to manage the first half of the course to be able to take advantage of the second half. So I knew it mentally. I don't think I was prepared for it. And I think I tricked myself into thinking this is a fast course. So I can do 3:10. Maybe I could have, if I did it, executed better. I don't know. So I think that's what it was, is that I think I expected it to be a fast course, and it certainly can, but I don't think it necessarily is. And you're right. I think a lot of people I spoke to after, said, you know, the same thing. We had the same experience. I have a couple of people I know who did well, but most people felt the same way. They said, I don't understand why it felt so hard. And I think we were all expecting it to feel easier. Like Chicago felt to me, not that any marathon feels easy, but Chicago felt executable, if that makes sense. Like, it felt like I executed it well. This race did not feel like I executed it well. And I think, now knowing what I know now, if I had gone back, or what would I tell people in the future, I would say, you know, just that you really do have to manage that first part. And you really, in training, I think have to do a lot of work on ups and downs and just get used to that gear changing. Because I think that's what probably fatigued me, was that constant changing up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down. Like, we go down, we go up, we go down, we go up. There was not a lot of flat in the first part. And I just in retrospect, that's probably what I think made me feel like it was so much harder than Chicago. Because even when I was going at a pretty fast pace and feeling good, I knew it felt hard. Like, it didn't feel fluid, if that makes sense. It felt like it was constant changing.
That makes sense. That is also some of the feedback that we receive from our runners, many of whom had terrific races like you did. Again, I'm asking these questions without even saying, first of all, congratulations, you ran an incredible race. And let's not forget, this wasn't your goal race. This was, you already achieved your goal at Chicago. This was, and 2 months after Chicago, you're completely recovered, but you weren't specifically training for this, and you pulled out a terrific time. You ran so strong. So my questions aren't at all diminishing that. My questions are more about how you felt. So
yeah, fair enough. That, and I will say, I will say, I think 2 marathons in a season is hard. Like, somebody just asked me, one of our runners who did Rehoboth, who did well, but didn't have a great race, like didn't feel great in the race, asked if she should go do another one before her spring marathon. She's got a spring marathon. And I said, you know what, I just wouldn't do it. At least I know I feel, maybe I'm like, you know, projecting, but I feel like I was absolutely recovered. I felt great. I you know, had a great 5K the week before, week and a half before, like, I felt great. I just do think the cumulative fatigue definitely, and the mental fatigue, I think that was part of it too, is I was kind of done. I finished. I said, I don't want to run another marathon. I don't ever want to see another Morton. Love Mortons. But I was like, if I ever have to see another Morton, I will be happy. Like, now that I have 3 boxes of Morton in my house for, from the feeds, whatever Cyber Monday special. I was just mentally and physically fatigued. So I think that is certainly had, you know, is a factor. But look, bottom line is, I think it's a great race. The weather was perfect. I mean, that was, I don't think I've ever had more perfect weather in a marathon ever. It was perfect. I felt good at the start. I didn't feel overly cold. It was about 50, 55 and sunny, like partly cloudy to start with, sunny.
So the weather was perfect for your weather, but yes, it was a little bit warm for folks.
I was just going to say.
Yeah. So yeah, talk it about did that get a little bit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It got a little bit warm, and that could be a factor too, but it definitely got, it probably got closer to 60 toward the end and sunny. So I did hear a lot of people after talk, and I saw a lot of people. That was the other thing. I did see a lot of people who were done, who stopped, who were on the side, who were walking, who were in need of medical attention. So, and again, I don't know if that's a factor of a lot of people going all out in this race, because this is like a big race for them. And there are a lot of hard chargers here that are going out. So that could have been part of it. But it definitely was, like I said, I thought it was perfect, but it was, several people I heard say like that was too warm toward the end. So I again, the CIM is known for, you know, its course, its weather, and how they cater towards runners who are really coming there to try to run a fast time. And I agree that that's, you know, their pace groups in general are very good. I think their pacers are experienced. I think our pacer was probably great. I just probably went out a little bit too fast for me. So again, I think it's a great race. I think my big takeaways are, you know, it's a big trip out there. It's a tiring trip. That's something to take into account. Like if you're traveling, and you know, one of our runners that we coach, Dave Corrigan, had originally planned on doing CIM, and then he had switched to Rehoboth. And when he did, I kind of was like, why are you switching? And he said, you know, the travel's a lot. And he said, I, you know, I know the beginning of this course is a lot of ups and downs, and that's making me a little bit nervous. I'd rather like go to a course like Rehoboth that I know is totally flat. And I told him after, I said, you were right. I you know, I said to him, I said, no, I said, the trip's not that bad. And there's a net downhill course, but he was right. Like it's a big trip. So it's a lot of fatigue from that. And I think, again, it's a course you really have to be good at managing. And if that means in training, learning how to, you know, have your body switch from a lot of down to up and up to down, and make sure you're doing that efficiently, and make sure you're comfortable with that, and make sure you're working on strength, and on pacing, nutrition, all of that. I think that is, you know, that would be the key to having a good race there. I think if you're looking for like a kind of a race where you can lock into a pace, even Boston, I feel like you lock in for the first, you know, you get locked in the first part of Boston. You get that up and down later in the race, but it's a short portion of it, and you're ready. You know, you're expecting it. You're ready, a little bit fatigued. You've been preparing for that. This again, I think that's kind of probably what threw me, is how much up and down there was through the, like I said, it wasn't just, it didn't stop at 12 or 13. It kept going every, so.
I think just listening, I mean, you do, because you and I run the same routes. We train a lot on rollers. I think this is a lot of it. Is just about the first time you race a course, you're not familiar with it, you're not quite sure what to expect. And so the reality is different perhaps than expectations. But I very much believe, based on everything you've shared, that this course is a favorable one to run another time if you're so inclined, because you do have all of those strengths and that training to execute it. And you executed it so well. So I'm also sort of speaking out there to folks who raced it or are thinking about racing it that may not have had the experience they expected or are expecting it to be just an easy course. Knowing now and listening to your recap, Lisa, it's super helpful to know that while it's a PR favorable course, just like Boston is a PR favorable course, managing expectations and preparing for that challenge early on will allow you to train your brain for this type of race. So when you go out, you know what to expect, and the reality and the expectation are a little bit closer together. So I think this recap, for that reason alone, is super helpful, in addition to all of the logistics. I know we have to wrap up soon, but could you quickly talk about just a little bit more the finish, your experience, and anything else you think people should know before heading out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think I covered most of everything. But I do agree. I think it's a PR favorable course. I think it's, you know, a lot, it certainly is, but a lot of courses can be PR favorable courses, but it is exactly about tempering expectations. And I completely agree with you. It's about getting familiar with the course. Look, New York, the first time I ran New York, it was awful. I said, I'm never coming back. Like, I'm never doing
Same,
this
you
course
haven't
again.
been back.
Right. Well, it was the first time I did it, and then I went back like 8 or 9 years later, and that was my course PR. So, you know, it's my marathon PR still. So, because I knew what to expect, I knew what the course was like. So, I think, would I go back and do it? I'm not rushing to go back all the way to the West Coast. I was telling Paul that, I said, when we pick our, we both entered the lottery for Berlin, just because it would have been fun to do it. I could have done it through a time qualifier, but Paul wanted to do it too, and he. To time qualify for a guy, you have to be of like 250 or under. So we entered as a team, as a in the lottery, did not get it. It seems like there was a very big number of people, large number of people entering this year. We did not get it, but I kind of was like, phew, because I don't want to do another big trip to do a marathon. I was like, if fall marathons, I'm looking locally. Like, I'd like to do something close. It's a big, maybe I'm getting old, maybe I'm getting tired, but you know, that's so, I think that, that's just something, to consider. But, you know, really, Sacramento Runners Association does a really nice job. They have a ton of volunteers. They really are, you know, it's amazing to see a running club put on a race of this caliber. It was really phenomenal. We had a great time. Didn't get to see a ton of Sacramento. We left Sacramento on Sunday and went to LA to see Paul's family, and then flew back from LA. And I will say, on the flight back, because of the experience on the way there, we upgraded to you know, whatever it was, premium, the economy plus. We upgraded to economy plus to get a little extra room. And the flight from LA back is, especially coming, you know, west to east in the winter, is much faster. So it was only 4 hours and 45 minutes of a flight in economy plus. I was like, this is so much better. I felt so much better. And I will say the one little thing I was going to add, I forgot to add that little pebble I thought I had in my shoe. You know this story, because I sent you a beautiful picture. I got back to the hotel room. I felt fine, but I wanted to get in the shower, and I take my shoes off. I take my sock off. I had a quarter size blood blister on my big toe. I don't know why.
We'll add it in the show notes. Just kidding.
Yeah, no, don't do that. It was so bad. I was like, what is this? And immediately I sent you and Lori Rice a picture, and I said, I don't know what that, and you were so funny. You're like, get to urgent care. That could be circulation. I'm like, no, it's a blood blister. Like, I know you probably couldn't tell, but it was this huge blood blister, and I didn't know what to do. So I actually ended up emailing our dear friend and fellow Run Performance Lab volunteer here at Montgomery County Roadrunners Club, Dr. Adam Spector. I emailed him and I said, hey, I didn't send him the picture because I did not want to I'm sure he's seen plenty, but I said, I have a huge blood blister on my toe. What do I do? And he said, soak it in warm water, lance it with either a nail clippers or a pin or sterilized or a scalpel, I carry a scalpel with me, and then put bandages on it and put Neosporin on it just so it doesn't get infected. And I got to tell you, I was like, I can't do that. I can't do that. I'm like, I'm going to wait till I get home. And if it's still bad, I'll go to him and let him do it. Cause it wasn't in any pain. It did not hurt me. It wasn't getting red. It wasn't inflamed. I felt like I had something in my sock. I didn't think it was anything there. So I said, you know, I'm just going to leave it alone and see what happens. And I'm happy to report that as of today, it's actually disappeared. I think it might've leaked or popped or something. I didn't see anything on my sock, but it is now totally gone. I realized this morning, I'm like, I don't even feel anything on my toe anymore. And I looked and it's gone. So magically it is gone. And luckily I didn't have to do anything. It's not infected. I mean, I've still been keeping an eye. Like today when I noticed it was gone, I thought maybe it popped or punctured or something. I put some Neosporin on it, but so luckily I'm okay. But that was my only, otherwise I actually felt great. Like I felt, you know, no soreness. I feel really good.
Wow. That's really amazing. Hurt.
Yeah. I mean, obviously my body's recovering. I'm going to give it that time, but I felt fine. Like flying home, I was worried about, you know, that long flight and then getting up, but I felt totally fine. We walked around while we were in LA. I didn't do anything, you know, anything special. And, I feel like I don't, you know, feel super, super sore. And I feel totally fine, now, but that was my one little lasting, gift from the race, was that big blood blister.
It's gone from your toe, but not from my head.
I know. Sorry. I think I said trigger warning. This is a really bad, ugly, ugly toe picture coming in. But other than that, I have bruised toenails from Chicago, but I didn't get any new ones. So now my feet look better. But again, I don't know if it was the shoe, because I've worn them for Boston. I wore them for Chicago. I don't know if something actually was in my sock that was rubbing during the, I don't know what it was, but that was my one scary, after effect of the race. So that, you know, that's it. We're back now, back on East Coast time. I kind of stayed on on East Coast time the whole time we were there. We kept waking up at 4 in the morning, which is kind of ridiculous. I will say, I ended up leaving two of my three kids, because one was away home alone this time. Not totally alone. My parents live nearby. We have neighbors that are here. And I'm so home right now. So Buster is greeting here. So everybody was fine, which is
excellent.
But it is nice to be home.
Excellent. Well, congratulations, Lisa. I'm super proud of you and so proud of our runners. And thank you for this recap, this is definitely evergreen material. I'm sure that many folks will be listening to this next year when they prepare for CIM. So thank you for the detailed recap. I know I appreciate it. Should I ever decide to run this race in the future? And I know so many folks out there will as well. So congratulations. Share for our listeners. They may not have caught it. What was your final time at CIM?
3:15 something. I have to see exactly what it was.
Fantastic.
I'll pull it up, but 3:15 and change.
Outstanding. Yeah. So you maintained about a 7:30 pace, which is fantastic. And congratulations. And now it's time for some rest and recovery. And so we will be back next week with some additional fun news and details. But in the meantime, Lisa, I wish you a very happy Hanukkah. And congratulations again. Thank you.
Thanks, Julie.
Bye.
Bye.